Right now, it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday morning with the Media Beat. David is a PBS television correspondent. He reports on ethics and belief. He has his own terrific website called themediabeat.us. That's the location. The Media Beat is at themediabeat.us. Of course, we post David's show up on our own website, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand. Click on the Media Beat with David Tarachuk, and we welcome him in. I do believe he's in Dublin, Ireland. Good morning, David.
Yes, I am. I'm very glad to be joining that attentive observer of all life's oddities, Marshall Miles. And this week, not joining you from the media capital of the world, New York City, but I'm joining you from the media outsourcing capital of the world, Dublin, Ireland. More about that outsourcing business later. But could I start with just a little bit of turning of the tables now that I'm in Ireland? Can I hold up to the light a piece of local news, local for you in Connecticut, though it's an important story here in Dublin?
Absolutely.
Let me tell you about it. It's important for the Irish diaspora throughout the world, wherever green is worn, as the national poet W.B. Yeats said. There's a protest going on this week in Connecticut, Saturday afternoon in Hamden, Connecticut, against the closure of Ireland's Great Hunger Museum, which was opened by the University of Quinnipiac, which is in Hamden, of course. It was opened only 9 years ago, and now a closure has been ordered in the wake of the appointment of a new president for the school, Judy Olia, an Australian, if that's of any relevance at all. The closure was ordered by her and by the Board of Trustees, apparently on the grounds of cost saving. It's a sad thing for all Irish people who are interested in their own history, Irish Americans especially. I mean, the museum commemorates, of course, the Great Hunger, the famine conditions of the middle of the 19th century, which helped to create that massive emigration, the biblical scale exodus of poor Irish people, which has come to so influence the character of much of the United States. There's a lot of anger amongst Irish Americans about this cultural closure, of course, and much over here, too, in reaction. The protests will go on. This weekend is only part of a campaign to get the university to change its mind, or at the very least, not to split up all the art and artifacts in some profit-taking sale, which the protesters fear the university might get up to.
So it's probably, is it a monetary decision that they decided to do this?
That seems to be the argument. It's had very low attendance in recent months, and perhaps more than the last year or so. But that's hardly surprising given COVID. And at the same time, the costs are rising, and generally speaking, fundraising for the university is down. So, in essence, it probably is just a cost-cutting exercise, and there is this fear, of course, that all those extraordinary exhibits in the museum will be sold off by the university to help offset their losses.
I'm surprised that they don't try to hand it over to the University of Connecticut or other universities in Connecticut or other nonprofit organizations that could operate it.
There could well be another way, and I think the protesters are open to any helpful suggestions that might keep the thing together and keep it open to the public, of course, which is their main hope.
All right, do we need a bugle this week?
We do. I have something to fanfare.
Okay, well, here we go.
I want to fanfare some reporting about Facebook, and that will come as no surprise to you, I'm sure. Or perhaps we should call it Meta now, as we have to now apparently recall their overarching holding company. They want to change its name, well, they are changing its name, to Meta, to reflect what they are trying to do with Facebook now, which is convince us of the virtues of virtual reality and turn Facebook as a platform into a virtual reality site. But the overarching holding company, which owns and controls not just Facebook, but also Instagram and the WhatsApp platform too, is supposed to be called Meta from now on. But I'm not concerned with reporting on the name change. As one of Facebook critic, who used to be an early investor in Facebook and now criticizes it all the time. He said the name changes, but the facts don't. So what I'm anxious to hold up to the light again is reporting on how Facebook actually behaves. The Irish Times here in Dublin, covering all of Ireland. And much more. It's an international newspaper. It deserves plaudits this week for a report that essentially accuses Facebook of money laundering, or citing the details in which it money launders. It cites the way that Facebook is generating income across 54 countries right across Africa, every single country in Africa, without paying corporate tax. And the Irish Times is quoting the leading businessman here, Dennis O'Brien, who is noted for his work in, Dennis O'Brien is noted for his work in the tech area, and he's talking in the context, when the Irish Times is quoting him, he's talking in the context of Facebook having made a major headquarters here in Ireland since being tempted here by this country's vast array of tax breaks and tax holidays. And this is probably the strongest quote in the whole article in the Irish Times. Dennis O'Brien says, "Ireland regrettably has allowed itself to become Facebook's laundrette for the biggest tax avoidance scheme in the world." And I can, you know, and we all know when a source uses a phrase like that, a laundrette, Facebook's laundrette is now Ireland, apparently. That's the kind of phrase that becomes a headline. And sure enough, it's been a headline in the Irish Times. But it's not the only story that's been covering interesting aspects of Facebook this week. I noticed that the tech publication Wired, which the edition of it, at least, that's produced this side of the water, has been investigating what happens with Facebook's outsourcing. I mentioned it right at the beginning. I'm interested in outsourcing. Well, in this case, it's the outsourcing of Facebook's famous or infamous, perhaps, so-called moderating of its content, often the vicious and hate-filled postings on its platform. One of the companies that it outsources to is Accenture, you know, a massive international consulting firm, business consulting firm that used to headquarter itself in Bermuda, but guess what? It's headquartered now right here in Dublin. It and a smaller company called Covalin are the people who recruit employees to be moderators for Facebook. They spend endless hours watching the most repulsive material, they work long hours with highly controlled breaks, tiny breaks built into the timetable. They're being paid minimal wages. They're made subject to non-disclosure agreements, so they can't talk about their conditions, although they are starting to now. That's the point of the Wired magazine story. And they're getting no mental or emotional support of any kind to counter or help them cope with the kind of material that they have to read and watch. The article quotes example of the content moderators here, a woman called Isabella Plunkett, who's Irish. She told the Irish Parliament about what their bosses are offering as possible therapy. Let me quote her. She says, "They suggest karaoke and painting, but you don't always feel like singing, frankly, after you've watched a video of somebody being battered to bits." I guess I should just add the footnote that this outsourcing model for content moderation is practiced worldwide, not just by Facebook, but by many social media platforms. It's a highly labor-intensive process, as you can imagine, and all the companies do want to keep their labor costs down, inevitably.
Well, Facebook followed the same thing that Google did years ago by changing their main company name, I think, to Alphabet or something like that.
It is Alphabet, indeed.
Facebook is still Facebook, and The good things it does are more and more being outweighed by the bad things that are allowed to happen, not only on Facebook, but most social media sites. It is quite a quandary that the world faces with social media. Such a great idea, and yet, as you say, they're putting these efforts together to try to regulate, but I'm afraid, as the old expression goes, the horse is out of the barn.
Yeah, well, there will be efforts in lots of countries, and Europe is to the fore in this, of course, to try and place stricter and firmer and more enforceable regulations upon all these social media sites. It's a battle, of course, that engages media watchers like ourselves. I mean, there will be the classic debate between freedom of speech and the desire to limit people's capacity for doing real harm.
And we have the what you could call, I guess, the two top Catholics meeting right now. Joe Biden is meeting.
The world's leading Catholics. Yes, I guess so you could call them.
Yeah,
Joe
we,
and Francis. Yes,
yes. They're meeting, and the Pope before Biden got there, once again stepped forward and a strong call for radical action on climate change.
Yes, indeed. Joe Biden's visit to the Vatican is the beginning of a diplomatic journey to Europe. By Sunday, he'll be in Glasgow, Scotland, just across a smaller body of water from here, across to Scotland, the one-time industrial capital of Scotland, Glasgow. The COP26, it's a boring title for what in fact is a really important international summit. It's short for, COP is just short for the Conference of Parties. Parties to what? Parties to the Paris Agreement on climate change. It happens to be the 26th of such international meetings since the agreement itself was signed. And yes, the Pope got things off to a big international start by a statement given to every single media outlet in the world, just about. It was certainly amongst the topics that he and President Joe Biden discussed. I mean, in Europe, Joe Biden's agenda will include these climate matters, of course, because he's going to Glasgow as well, along with his climate change guru, I was going to say. That's not really quite the right word, but his special envoy. While he's in Europe, in fact, while he's in Rome still, he'll be taking part in the G20 summit, which is the 20 industrialized countries, major industrialized countries of the world. And there again, climate will be high on the agenda, along with COVID, of course. Every advanced country is now making progress against COVID, although there are patches of the world where it's fiercely rampant still. And even in these two islands here, Britain and Ireland, we're finding upticks, much more serious in England than in Ireland. But people are beginning to question whether the loosening of restrictions that has taken place over the last months needs to be rethought. Even here in Ireland, where the numbers of incidents of the disease and hospitalizations and death are tiny now, in comparison with many in the world, like the United States or Brazil. People are still starting to wonder, well, shouldn't we start taking some stronger precautionary measures again? This is the background, again, you know, of public health internationally against which we're operating now. And of course, the usual matters of economic cooperation will be discussed at the G20. And it's all of a by way of preparation for that major meeting in Glasgow, where collaboration is absolutely essential. It can't be done anything major or anything substantial in terms of getting control of our warming planet depends entirely on countries getting together and actually collaborating. So Glasgow is the next best chance.
Now, during his trip abroad, President Biden will meet with the President of France, Macron. It's going to be their first face-to-face meeting since the submarine deal, and I'm sure that some sort of sub-deal will be worked out to make the French a little less angry and a little more accepting of it.
I think it might be a sub-deal in the sense that it will be about submarines. It won't be about submarines, but it will be substantial, we hope, but at the same time, it won't grab the world's attention. It'll be done sort of quietly, but certainly there's a need for these two major allies of the Western world to get on a better and more even keel. Biden will also, by then, have spent a good long time with Prime Minister Laghi of Italy, who now seems to be more than Macron, interestingly, stepping into the leadership footsteps of Angela Merkel, who is now waving goodbye from Germany. And just judging, what the balance of power and influence is amongst European countries now is something that the United States, the State Department in particular, is paying a lot of attention to now, how to relate to Europe in this changed atmosphere, which is created not just by Brexit, by Britain leaving Europe, but also by the departure of that real quite giant figure of Angela Merkel in Germany. So there's a lot of transition to be talked about. And one of the interesting things is that ex-leaders now are stepping into positions of activism, I suppose you would call it. There's now a major announcement made, not just by the Pope on the matter of global warming and climate change and the need to get it under better control, but also a body of ex-leaders from right across the world, led in this case by a former Prime Minister of Great Britain, Gordon Brown, the successor to Tony Blair, what they want current international leaders to do is the dramatic measure of organizing an international airlift to ensure that COVID vaccines do not go to waste by expiring in their huge sort of stockpiles in the rich countries and get shipped in time before they expire to the poorer countries that need them. So there's a lot of diplomatic activity going on in Europe now, and that's one of the most salient new salvos fired by ex-leaders in their respective countries.
You mentioned Brexit, and there's an interesting story that I was watching this morning on the BBC, and that is France. France has warned, have been warned by the United Kingdom that it will retaliate over the threats. What I'm talking about here, their Brexit fishing rights, post-Brexit fishing rights. France has said it could stop British boats from landing if the dispute over licenses was not resolved. That's just another small outshoot of Brexit, but Brexit really is going to have these little quips come out probably for the next couple of years while things try to settle down and they arrange things.
There are a lot of these loose ends that have not been tied up, and in some there are ends that were tied supposedly with the Brexit agreement, and the fishing rights one is a case in point. France and Britain are now arguing about the actual operation of the agreement, such as it was arrived at the time that the Brexit deal was signed. They have the surprise, surprise. Each country has a different interpretation of what it means, and we've already had a Scottish boat, of all things, all the way down, a long way from Scotland, down in waters close to the Channel Islands, so those isles that are little dots on the map between England and France. France has actually impounded one ship and another one has been fined for what the French are calling a sort of error of navigation. It could be claimed that they brought it into French waters, and what exactly people's rights are on either side of these demarcation lines is what is at issue. And England is calling it England, because essentially that's what it is. The Parliament in London, acting really not so much for Scotland and not so much for Wales in this matter, being very English, as often the phrase often used is little Englanders. But they've been saying that the French reaction is disproportionate, and they're threatening to take retaliatory action against France too. So, yeah, I think we're going to have the sort of outflow of minor, relatively minor disputes, but annoying ones that come from the Brexit disruption, that Brexit has brought to the economies of these islands as well as to Europe. And we'll see many of them occurring in Ireland. They already have started. We've talked about them a bit, and I think while I'm here, I'll be hearing more of them to talk to you about in the coming weeks. One of the prospects, of course, is that there's going to be more trouble about the customs customs regulation of goods coming into Northern Ireland from England, and whether that gets treated the same as material going to the south of Ireland in the Republic. That's all tricky and testy areas.
And back in the United States, we have the former president of the United States. Actually, the trial has been signified to go on with inappropriate conduct with a woman. And now we find out that in Albany, New York, Governor Cuomo now has a complaint alleging him of improper touching. And so that trial is going to forthcome. And we just live in a strange time, David.
What's odd about the reporting of the former Governor Cuomo's the accusation against him is that it's a criminal complaint at misdemeanor level, but the reporting looks a little confused about who exactly is prosecuting him. It looks now as if it'll be under the aegis of the sheriff of the county that includes Albany, the capital city of New York State. But it's all been a little confusing. But this is outflow from one major event, of course, which is the report some time ago now by New York's own Attorney General, Letitia James. A very fulsome report conducted by independent investigators was what brought a whole slew of accusations against the then governor, which of course prompted him to resign. Now, the interesting news this week, which has been, it's been rippling outward from New York State, even here to Dublin, is that Letitia James, current Attorney General, is almost certainly, in this coming week, to declare herself as a candidate for, guess what, the governorship of New York State. So she has quite a record to run on when it comes to what kind of behavior we expect of a governor of New York State.
All right, and back to the United States. The budget bill was unveiled with the actually biggest climate investment in U.S. history. The Build Back Better plan was unveiled yesterday, and a $555 billion package of credits, grants, and more like that. Senator Joe Manchin didn't want as much spent against the climate, but he forced the Democrats to drop a key provision targeting the electric power sector. But the bill has been put together, and Manchin is now on line with it. Democrats have got to get this done, and they've got to get the infrastructure bill done. Otherwise, they face a real, real, real bad future.
I noticed one of the, I guess you can call them mainstream Democrats, Capitol Hill, you know, to distinguish them from what in this on this side of the Atlantic we would call a parliamentary rump, perhaps, of just two senators, Manchin, as you suggested, and also Senator Sinema. They seem to be the obvious obstacles against getting getting Biden's program as a whole in so many areas through and turned into legislation which he can finally sign at his desk. And it also the member of the mainstream Democrats I'm thinking of said that it seems everything seems to now boil down to the mood in the Senate, and that is determined by what Senator Manchin had for breakfast today. It seems an extraordinary amount of influence being held by Manchin and of course Sinema. But we'll get something passed, I'm sure, in the next few days, and then I suspect Biden might be able to hold his head that little bit higher in Glasgow when it comes to climate matters.
Now, so how long are you over there in Scotland?
At least one more week, maybe more. I will keep you posted, but I'll certainly be talking to you from here in Dublin next week.
The great thing about you being there with all that's going on is we get a great world view of what the world looks in at the United States and reacts to what goes on in the United States. That's just a terrific thing about you being on foreign soil.
Well, it's essential for my journalistic health, I think. I regularly feel that a change of perspective is essential for me, and it's a good thing for most journalists, I think, to get away from their home territory and as well as looking at the new territory they're in, look back home and see what home looks like from a world global view.
David, it's always great to speak to you, and we'll speak to you next week.
Look forward to that.
David Tarachuk with The Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. Of course, David's website, themediabeat.us. And you can find David right here on robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on The Media Beat with David Tarachuk.